Hey guys, welcome back to Traps Lodge. Recently I got to sit down with my old man, Dr. Joe Burkett III. He's a veterinarian by profession. He taught me a lot through the years. I know I wouldn't be where I am today without his knowledge and his guidance. We've had our differences over the years, as most family members do, but it was nice to sit down with him and rehash some of his life and reasons why he did what he did for my brother and I and my sisters, and how he grew up, and which I thought was totally normal, and turns out it was quite the adventure of a childhood. And he's a very interesting man. He's very intricate, very, very, very wise, and very smart. He's probably the best at what he does, and he pushed me to be the best at what I do. And I really enjoy my life, and I hope you guys are enjoying listening in, and hopefully we can fuel the fire inside everybody to get out there, get outdoors, get hunting, fishing, traveling, and enjoy what God has created for everybody, and get out of the concrete jungle and just open your eyes and your ears and all your sights and senses to the great outdoors. It's been my life, not just a huge part of my life, but it's been my life, it still is my life, and I enjoy it every day. And hope me sharing that with y'all is intriguing and drives you to step out of your box and try new things and go new places and explore new avenues of hunting, whatever aspect of hunting that may be. I didn't have a choice as a kid growing up. My dad just sent me places and signed me up for things that I didn't know what I was getting signed up for. But looking back, even though at the time I may have regretted it, looking back, I'm very appreciative for what he did for us and how he pushed us to get out there and do what we did. And it's been a big play into how I developed into a hunting guide and a capture specialist and understanding wildlife and living with nature day in and day out. So enjoy the podcast with Papa Joe, as I call him. And I look forward to seeing you guys and hearing your feedback. Thanks for listening to Traps Lodge. Okay, we got my dad here, and my mentor, and my big sister Jane, and big sister Judy. We want to dive into questioning dad. I want to ask dad, so granddad wasn't big into big game hunting.
No.
What got you into big game hunting? You've told me this a long time ago, but I know you did Kenya, 68 and 69. Granddad taught me how to shoot doves, but he wasn't a big game hunter. He wasn't a big elk hunter. He wasn't a big Africa guy. What turned you onto that, and what made you instill that into us kids?
Well, actually, Kerrville, Texas was kind of a crossroads of the safari trade, safari world. In fact, San Antonio, Texas had a sports shop in the Ballam store of the Milam building where my granddaddy's office was when I was just a small kid, and I'm talking about 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And it was called Tepper Wines. And Tepper Wines was kind of the focus of the safari trade in Texas. And there was a lot of independent oil people in Texas in those days. And they all went to Africa and spent a lot of time in Africa. There were several families in the hill country, one of them there in Kerrville. And I'll call her name here in a minute. But anyway, they had two girls. They would get out of school, at the end of May. And mother and dad would pack those two girls up, and they would go to England. They'd go to Holland. They'd go to Purdy. They'd buy them rifles, and they'd buy shotguns. They'd get outfitted. They'd get their clothes. They'd go to shooting schools and all that kind of stuff, professional fly fishing schools. And then they'd spend the rest of the summer in Africa, and they'd come back. And my dad knew all those people. He represented a lot of those people. Well,
so granddad was a state representative?
State representative, yes, from 1950 to 1960.
And granddad was born in Liberty, Texas, what year?
I was born in Eastland, Texas.
Eastland, Texas, 1912.
He was an attorney by profession, attorney.
Right.
Yeah. But so anyway, I was fascinated by that whole thing. And there was a number of families that lived there in Kerrville. And their whole world was safaris, going to Africa, and that was not only fashionable, but it was a lot of fun. One of those people, and I'll try to remember his name here in a minute, but anyway, he was a real good friend of my dad's, and he was always looking for an excuse to go to the ranch, just to go out there and go rabbit hunting, go do this and do that and the other. Well, the most convenient excuse he could come up with to go to the ranch was to ask my dad to take me. Mm-hmm. And so he'd come by the house and he'd pick me up. Red Early was his name, E-A-R-L-Y. And he'd come by and he'd pick me up. We'd go to the ranch. And he taught me how to fly fish. He taught me how to, proper way to shoot, English, you know, English style shooting like I taught y'all. And so that was my fascination for that. And then as I got older, I was further fascinated by it. And that was just something I always, and in particular, I was fascinated with the professional hunters and who those people were. And at this point in time, people don't have any good recollection or good understanding of who those people were. But if you ever have time to study Out of Africa, the movie Out of Africa, it had a lot of people involved in that story that were basically English gentlemen that went out to Africa, to East Africa. They were probably second or third born, and so they weren't going to inherit anything, so they got their cut of the pie, and they off they went to Africa. But most of them were educated at Eton or Oxford or one of those big English schools, so they were extremely well-educated people, cultured people that went to Africa, and they're the ones that developed the safari trade, and I was always fascinated by that. Still am.
And that's where hunting started.
That's where professional hunting started.
In South Africa.
In East Africa.
East Africa.
Kenya. Kenya, Tanzania. But Kenya primarily.
Yeah.
That's where it got its start. And, there was a guy by the name of Percy Phillips that was kind of the granddaddy of the safari trade. He started in the early 1900s, 1910, before World War One. And then after World War One, then he really refined it. But he took under him as apprentice PH, so to speak, some similar people. Dennis George Finch Hatton was one of those. That's in the movie Out of Africa. He was educated at Oxford. He was educated at Eton. Brogan Blixen was a very wealthy guy, educated in Denmark. But they were very well educated, very cultured people, and started the safari trade. And what they perfected in the safari trade was service. And if you remember growing up around our house, that's what we focused on. It wasn't so much killing an animal, but it was the focus.
Yeah, I remember growing up and getting home from school, and the girls would put on their khaki skirts and white blouses, and Hunter and I would put on our khaki pants, and you taught Judy and Jane and I and Hunter how to set a table properly, how to pour wine properly. Mm-hmm. And so by the time we went to professional hunting school, we had endured a lot of that professionalism, mm-hmm. which is not something that's really spoke upon in the States, especially in Texas.
No, in Texas, it's a good old boy camp.
Yeah, in Texas, it's a good old boy camp. If you got a business card and a pickup and a rifle rack, you're a hunting guide.
Oh, absolutely.
But there's a lot of professionalism that's been lost. And I remember growing up, Granny got me a subscription to National Geographic, and I studied that constantly, wanting to travel the world, and you instilled in me all your travels, and and I wanted to go all these places, and I read Rorick and Hemingway and the Green Hills of Africa by Hemingway, and it intrigued me entirely. But tell me about your lion and bear trapping days. What years were those, back when you used to trap and hunt Utah and New Mexico, Arizona a lot?
Well, the first mountain lion I caught was with Richard Keyes, and I believe it was I hadn't graduated from high school. My dad knew somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody, and we got an invitation to go to the Longfellow Ranch. You know where the Longfellow Ranch is? Mm-hmm. You know where Marathon is?
Yes, sir.
Okay, South America, Marathon is the Longfellow Ranch, and it's still there. I think it's about 400,000 acres. It was one of the West properties. Anyway, we got an invitation to go to Longfellow Ranch. And so Richard and I loaded up an old 49 Chevrolet pickup. And we loaded up the dogs, and we went out to Longfellow, and we were going to go out there and try to catch a bobcat, is what we were going to try to catch. And the gate that we went in is still there on Highway 90. When you go out Highway 90, like you're going from Del Rio. Yeah. Well, where you're going like from Del Rio West and you go Sanderson and all that way.
Right, yeah.
You pass right by that old gate. But so anyway, we went out and caught a lot of coons. And the ranch manager was kind of fascinated with us young kids, I guess, out dinging around. But the last day we were there, we were getting ready to leave. And I don't remember the old man's name. But he suggested that we go up some draw and turn off up in some canyon or wherever the heck. He said, I always see a lot of cats on around that windmill up there. I guess they're coming into water. So anyway, Richard and I drove up there and we turned out our dogs and got them out of the truck. And then no sooner than we had them out of the truck, when they struck and went down that draw, and I mean, they were just screaming. Well, I looked at Richard and I said, well, I guess that coon's not going to survive. I thought they were going to catch a coon on the ground because they were running it so hot. And they didn't go but maybe a quarter of a mile, and all of a sudden they got treed. And I said, well, I guess the coon, and there's not many big trees out there.
Yeah.
So anyway, I thought, well, okay. So we got our stuff out of the truck, and I think I had an old beat up 22 of some kind. Richard had a pistol. He was in high cotton. He had a Colt Woodsman. I don't know if you've ever seen a Colt Woodsman or not, but it was a pretty popular little automatic pistol. And so we went trundling down the draw, and the draw was pretty dry. And we walked up to that tree, and there sat a mountain lion. We looked and crapped our pants when we saw that mountain lion sitting there. It wasn't a big mountain lion. It was probably 60, 70 pounds, I guess.
So what turned you on to trapping and running bears and mountain lions in the western states back when you and Mom were
dogs?
Dogs.
Yeah. I love to run dogs. You well know that.
When did you start running dogs? Because Granddaddy didn't do it.
I got my first hound when I was 14 years old. L.H. Purvis gave me a dog called Shorty, that I call Shorty, Walker dog. L.H. Purvis was a Texas Ranger that lived there in Kerrville, and I was in school with one of his sons, Tuffy. And anyway, he gave me that dog. And then later I got started in plots very shortly thereafter. There was a veterinarian in Bernie, I can't remember his name now, but Lon Smart. And Lon Smart knew a fellow that lived at Comfort, a fellow by the name of Reese. And he was a hospital administrator in San Antonio at the Santa Rosa maybe, Santa Rosa Hospital. And he had some really high dollar dogs. And one of the dogs he had was a dog called Smith Deal's Nigger Boy. Now, he was a purebred plot, one of the very early Grand Knight champions, Grand Champion plots. And he started to get blind. And so Mr. Reese somehow learned that I was liking dogs and stuff, so he gave me that dog with the condition that I'd treat his eyes every day and had to put drops in that dog's eyes every day. Well, Bob Snow, who was the captain of the predator control for the state of Texas, was retired living in Kerrville, had some of the best dogs in the country. He and his brother Luke Snow, who was sheriff of Raymondville for years and years and years, they had hellacious cat dogs. But so anyway, Bob heard that I had that dog, and he had a plot female named Sadie, Hazelwood Sadie, never forget her. And she was probably 13, 14 years old, old dog. And he wanted to try to breed her. Well, she's probably really too old to breed, but so anyway, we decided we'd try it. And we got three pups. Well, so for a stud feed pup, I took a pup and I called her Ginger. He took the two other pups, Zeke and Nick and Zeke, that he took to his Jaguar camp in Nayarit, Mexico, and they became very famous Jaguar dogs. So that's where I got started in the dog business. And that's when I was 14, 15 years old. And had dogs and off and on ever since then. And had some really noted dogs. Well, you know.
Yeah, you just received an award for plot hounds or something or another you should have.
Well, I got... It was kind of a posthumous award is what I call it, because I'd already out of the dog business. But the American Kennel Club awarded me Breeder of the Year 2 years ago. And Breeder of the Year is determined on points that dogs that you've bred earn. And that's field trials, bench shows, regular dog shows, conventional dog shows, like you see Madison Square Garden and all that kind of stuff. And if you were both the breeder of the sire and breeder of the dam, you got a full point. You know, let's say a dog wins 4 points at a show. If you're a breeder of both the dam and sire, you get all 4 points credited to you. If you just have a dam or the dog, well, when they split it, you just get 2 points. But so anyway, I had the most points accumulated. How that happened is I'd spread dogs out all over the country, and people were really liking them and competing with them in both the show ring and everywhere else. And so I had the most cumulative points, and I won that award, which shocked me. I was totally taken aback.